Hello, and welcome to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and
Jeff
McClure. We are here to talk to you today and whatever other day you want us to talk to you, because it's a podcast and it's on demand. But we're going to be talking to you about what happened in the market in the week ending March 15th. We're going to talk about some of the CPI and the PPI and other number letter soup combinations so that you can have lots of good things to tell people over the weekend. We're also going to touch on inflation quite a bit, and that'll all be after the bumper music and our following disclosure. Hello, and welcome back to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and
Jeff McClure.
We've got to give you some disclosures before we get started, because if we're not giving you disclosures, you might believe us or something. Oh, wait. Or maybe you'll... I'm not really sure what disclosures' purpose is, but I think they're necessary because enough people believe that they have a purpose. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. We're two bald people that are talking to you. We both have beards. I'm wearing a plaid shirt and he is wearing a plain shirt, and that should be a good way of telling us apart on the podcast. Elder Baldy is Jeff, and he is younger Baldy's father. I am younger Baldy, Jake. Most people think that we're brothers. We've been working together for 33 years now. So our combined experience is like 9,000 years. I hate it when people give combined experiences. That's a disclosure there. I don't like that a bit because it doesn't really add up that way. It's not like serving a sentence. Though maybe it is if you're working in the right place. The disclosures are, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. That's also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. First disclosure is we're not giving investment advice, even though I just told you it's an investment advisory firm. Second disclosure is just because it's registered with the SEC doesn't mean that that's some great deal of importance or ego stroking or anything else. That's just the regulator. It's like you don't go and brag about registering with the DMV. It's just the regulatory authority. If you see somebody speeding, you might want to call the DMV. Although that'd be weird. If you hear us saying something that's fraudulent, misleading, could harm the public in some way, the SEC is the one who you should call. I used to say, if you hear us say something stupid, but that's our normal state of existence, so the SEC would get upset if you called them every time we said something stupid. You have a disclosure to give us?
Well, my disclosure is that the information that we present on this educational podcast has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of those statements.
And the follow-up to that is, of course, that we absolutely warranty and guarantee the inaccuracy and incompleteness of all unsaid information on this podcast.
Yeah, but I didn't say said information this time.
No, but I
said that information.
I said information.
Ah, you said said?
Good. I said said. So if you're going to said next, then that would be said information. But unsaid information, it's like the number zero. It's totally imaginary. So what happened this week in the market?
Well, not much. That's all you need, right?
Yeah.
Not much?
That is the answer, okay. I guess. We're done. And next, in weather, in some places there was precipitation. In some places there were not. And now on to sports. The teams that had the most points seemed to win this week, except for those playing golf, which seemed backwards. And now on to the news. What happened in the market?
The S&P 500 stock index that we follow as the broad indicator of the stock market. It's not a very good indicator, but it's probably the best widely followed indicator.
So it's not good, but it is the best.
Right.
Right.
It ended the week at 5117.09, down 0.13%, which is just random noise. In other words, about where it was last week and the week before. The last 2 weeks, the S&P 500 stock index has not done much. And there's a reason it has not done much. That is because the Magnificent Seven, if you include Tesla, or the Special Six or whatever, if you take Tesla out of it.
Substantial or sensational or sizzling. You can use all kinds of what it sizzling really six.
Have not really done a lot in the last couple of weeks because as the earnings came out and they put in their forecast, people are beginning to wonder just exactly how important AI is going to be at some point. That it may not be quite as big a thing as they thought it was going to be, which I happen to agree with, but it's still coming along. Anyway, so, but if you look a little longer, the S&P 500, we affectionately refer to as the SPX, is 7.28% higher this year than when it started. It is 29% higher than a year ago, and is also 29% higher than it was 3 years ago, which tells you something. The last 3 years' growth in the S&P 500 all occurred in the last 12 months, which tells you something else about investing. And if you like annual average compound returns, and people don't like that too much, but that's about 9% per year for the trailing 3 years. Now, I went and looked up what inflation has averaged over the last 3 years, ending in February. And it's 5.3%. So what we've got, because when you throw the dividends in with the S&P 500, it raises it a little bit. You've got about a 4% real growth in the stock market valuation on average for the last 3 years, which is pretty much what we've seen over the last several decades on average. I mean, there are time periods when it goes down. There are time periods when it goes up a lot. It goes down a lot. But if you measure it over really long periods of time, the stock market tends to beat inflation by about 4% a year, which doesn't sound too impressive until you start adding it up over the years and you realize that that is important. And by the way, that relates to a question we're going to have in a few minutes. But we also look at another indicator, and that is the CRSP, U.S. Mid-Cap Value Index. And why do we look at that? Because it tends to, for some reason, known only to God and statisticians somewhere, it tends to show what's going on in the market. It tends to match what the market is doing as a whole, minus those seven high-tech digital stocks that have been driving the market upward. And it fell 0.73% for the week to 2594.8, but it's up about 3.18% year to date, and it's 15.26% higher than it was a year ago. And again, the key is to recognize that if you were in the stock market the last 3 years, the first 2 years, you saw nothing. Actually, you saw less than nothing on several occasions. And that's to tell you something about investing. And you just have to be there for the long term, or you might as well be someplace else. On the debt side, the trading of debt, which is what bonds are, the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury note ended the business day on Friday yielding 4.31%. That's up about 5% from last week's 4.09%, continuing a slow increase in longer-term interest rates. And for whatever it's worth, the 30-year is also gradually creeping up. The 30-year is a little higher than the 10-year, but way below the short-term. The highest interest rates in the Treasury yield curve remain less than 6 months' maturities. They're averaging around 5.5% if you analyze that. West Texas Intermediate crude oil, WTI, ended the U.S. market week at 81.04 cents per barrel. It also has been gradually creeping upward. And it's kind of interesting to watch this picture as the yield, the interest rates gradually creep upward and the price of oil gradually creeps upward very slowly. And it's consistent with what's going on in the economy. And that's our next subject.
That's right. We have CPIs and PPIs and other inflation indicators to look at. But I think without even digging too deeply into those details, we're running around a 3% inflation rate, slightly above 3% for the year. And that's right
on. Which is interesting. Oh, you're probably going to say this. Go ahead.
No, you say the interesting thing, and I'll see if I think it's interesting. The interesting we're talking thing about is interest. So
if you look at inflation over the last 30 years or so, it's averaged around 3%.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's higher at sometimes, lower at others. So 3% looks an awful lot like the natural level of inflation. Now, the Fed would love to see 2. And actually, the studies, the reading that I did, and this is to do with John's question that's coming up in a minute, the stock market performs best when the inflation is between 2 and 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it is, and it's closer to 3%, and the Fed may not like it, which means they're probably not going to lower interest rates anytime soon.
Right. So what does that mean? Now, there's parts of inflation that are higher One of the things that came out in the most recent reports is that when you include food and energy, inflation's running higher than that. It's almost 4%. So what you're seeing at the store, when you go to the store and you look at the milk or the eggs or the cereal or the candy or just about anything else, is a higher price than you're used to seeing. And that's not going away. When we say inflation is being tamed, it doesn't mean we move backwards. It doesn't mean that the prices go back down. There are some areas where we're seeing price reductions, and they're big areas. They're areas with big purchases. So durable goods right now, that includes automobiles and washing machines and dryers and dishwashers and factory machines, have had their prices drop. And you can see it really clearly in the car market. You can see big drops in the car market. And that's needed because during the pandemic, we couldn't get cars and people were willing to use body parts as down payments. Sometimes larger body parts and sometimes smaller, but they were all valuable. just ask the body part. So at the end of the pandemic, we needed to see those prices come back down. So there were a couple of things rising in price far faster than other things. Houses and automobiles were just rocket ships. And that leads us directly to the question from Inquisitor John, our most faithful questioner. Thank you, John. And as is tradition, he has sent us an email with a digital picture of the paper analog Wall Street Journal with notations on the paper and then questions in the digital. We're going to cover the entire spectrum here. So his question is rockets and feathers. And he's referring to an article in the Wall Street Journal. And the quote is, "Why prices rise like rockets and fall like feathers." And it's a great statement. It's something that around inflation that's been said for a long, long time. Prices go up fast and come down slow if they come down. Now, you can get into a deflationary spiral where they come down fast, and that's about the worst possible scenario for an economy. It generally means that there's been some type of natural catastrophe or a war or something major like that, a complete change in technology that causes people to be out of work. So when he's asking his question here, have any studies been done on investors like the rest of the world that have to pay on the front end for higher prices but benefit on the back end by being invested in the market through higher stock prices and dividends? Yes, that's the simple answer. What he's basically saying is, what about investors that are invested? They're buying things from companies that they may own. Say you own Walmart and you shop at Walmart. So Walmart is producing good profits, but some of that profit is coming from you because you're the one buying it. But you're also the owner of the company to some extent. One of the things that we've talked about a lot in the past is that the number one type of place that you can put money to keep up with inflation is to own businesses that keep their profit margin the same no matter what the prices are. So they raise prices as inflation goes up, as they have to pay more for their workforce or for the raw materials that make the thing. They raise their prices. So that causes this very nice return at the end. And as you were making an alluded to earlier, the stock market, when you take inflation out of it, is running about what its long-term average is. And that's normal. We say this regularly and people are shocked that the stock market rose with inflation plus its earnings. That's a pretty normal thing. Now, it doesn't happen on a regular way. It doesn't happen every day. It rises according to earnings minus inflation and then add inflation back into the... No, that's not how it happens. You get this jumpy all over the place volatility that averages out to that. So the studies, and what I want to kind of touch on here, is why is it that prices fall like a feather when they're going down? There are certain types of companies that are very nimble on their prices, and those tend to be companies that have good competition. So what we're seeing in the automobile market right now is a competition to lower prices and keep profitability. Tesla's lowering prices. A lot of the electric manufacturers are lowering prices. Ford, GM, Toyota. Why? Well, because the prices have come down for the materials that they're buying. They're lowering prices relatively slowly because they don't know when the prices might go back up for the materials. So that type of company with good competition, large companies in competition with other large companies tend to have a lowering price when things get harder. The places where prices rarely go down are when they're owned by individuals or mom and pops or a service type facility when there isn't enough competition. So an example of that is the rental housing in the United States. The vast majority of that is owned by people that own less than 5 rental places. So this isn't Berkshire Hathaway. This is somebody that's acquired houses throughout their life and they're renting them out now, or condos or apartments. And sometimes they did it on purpose and sometimes they did it by accident. But when they raise prices, you almost never see those prices come back down because they raise their standard of living with the prices as they go up. When rent goes up, they spend more money. So you almost never see rent prices come down after they've gone up. That's true for plumbing, too. If you see an increase in plumbing prices, you're probably never going to see that turn around and go the other way. That's the sticky part. So even when Tesla drops the price of a car by $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000, the plumber's not going to do that as well. In fact, they might raise prices. Because at the same time that those benefits of lower prices in the supply chain are coming into the auto manufacturer, there's still not enough plumbers to go around. And the fact is that they've got to hire people away from some other job in this type of employment market. That means they have to pay them more to get them away from the other job. There's just not a lot of unemployment. And when they hire them away, they have to give them a competitive wage, and that may cause them to have to raise prices. So the feather and the rocket concept is very, very clear. For a plumber invested in a plumbing business, there have been studies on that as well. So the question was, have there been studies on investors that are paying higher for the stuff they're buying, but they're making more money from owning the companies that are selling the things to them? And yes, that tends to raise the standard of living of the entire society. The more ownership in the market, in the businesses that you're buying from that you have, the better off you are, even when the prices are going up, because the profitability is keeping up with it. And that's really the cycle of economics, is that when you go into a business and you start it and you're making something that people are willing to pay for, and they're willing to pay you a profitable amount of money for it, then you can turn and buy from them whatever they're making for a profit. And you're both making profits. And you would think, well, how is that possible? This is how money is created. When a bank gives a loan to cause a business to start that then can get paid back with extra profitability, money is actually literally being created in the system. Most people think the treasury creates money. No, it's created when loans are paid back correctly. And that's what we're seeing right now. And when a lot of money gets created, sometimes it's created by the government or by the Federal Reserve, by buying things with stuff that they didn't actually have in circulation. But the vast majority of money that's created comes from loans that are paid back correctly. And you had something you wanted to add to that, so I'm going to hand it over to you.
Well, now, one of the things you said, prices rarely come down for things. Rents, for example.
Right.
That's unless you're in China right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, in China...
They're going the other way in China. Yeah. In China, rents are coming down.
Yeah. And this is when I said that you see this when there's catastrophic failure in the economy. That's what they're experiencing. Very large portions of their economy are mid-collision accident right now. The crunch is in slow motion, but it's happening.
Well, my mother used to say that one of every 3 people in the world is Chinese. So I figure if there are a lot of people listening to us in the United States, one out of every 3 of them, by definition, is Chinese, and they're watching prices come down.
Yeah, so it averages out, right? 1 foot in boiling water, okay. 1 foot in dry ice. It's a great average temperature, but you're probably losing both feet. So, yeah, this that's yeah. just kind of the big picture view. Did you have anything to wrap us up with?
Well, J.P. Morgan came out and said the stock market is not overpriced, and I have a tendency to agree. It's not underpriced, it's not overpriced, it's fairly priced. There are elements in it that are probably still underpriced. You have to be careful about where you go.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's parts of the market overpriced, parts of the market underpriced. There's still some fantastic deals out there.
We did mention at the beginning of this podcast that the inflation is up. It's running around 3.2% year over year right now, the consumer price index. And we think that's probably where it's going to stay for a while. And this is one of the things I'd like to throw in there. The analysis I have read from people who I think are smarter than I am have suggested that the 10-year treasury running in the 4% range, a little over 4%, is probably about where it should be in the current circumstances. Now, this is what's interesting. But if things return to normal and interest rates come down in the short term, they need to go up in the long term if the Fed's going to, if the 10-year treasury is going to stay around 4%. So longer term, I'm going to go out on a limb, make a little bit of a forecast. I think we're going to see higher long-term interest rates and lower short-term interest rates a year from now. So you can kind of roll that around in your head and see if it works for anything that you're doing.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
By the way, I have read several places where people have analyzed what a bubble is, and the stock market is not currently in a bubble.
Yeah, I have a definition.
Of bubble.
I have a definition of bubble, and it's certainly not being met here. When you have a bubble, you have a bunch of people who have no expertise in a field somehow able to make a great profit in it. That's not a normal market condition.
I want to throw one other thing in there about John's question, and that is, and I mentioned this earlier, I did some research on that, and it appears that if inflation gets above 3%, the stock market tends to do very poorly. So if you're buying stock thinking I'm going to beat inflation and inflation runs really high, the stock market has a hard time catching up and tends to do less well than inflation. On the other hand, if inflation falls below 2%, which is where it was for a while when the stock market was kind of stagnating, there's no room for prices to go up, and therefore companies cannot increase their profit margin, and that makes it rough on them. So the answer to your question is, inflation is running between 2 and 3%, which is where I think the Fed wants it to run. Stocks tend to do, over the long term, quite well in that environment. You get higher, if you get higher inflation than that, they don't tend to do well. And if you get lower than that, they do not tend to do well. And bonds, the higher inflation is, the worse they do.
Yeah.
And that was kind of an answer to his question.
Yeah.
And that's my soapbox.
Just a little piece of cool trivia there. That's part of the reason why inflation is more preferable to deflation, because the vast majority of people with debt are lower income. So when inflation is hurting the loaner, they're receiving less money in interest than inflation is. It's okay for the lower income people. It's the other way around when things are less valuable, at least as far as the monetary number goes. So you're getting paid less every month. The prices of food are down too, but you're getting paid less, and you've got a 30-year mortgage that was locked in at a time when you were getting paid more. So that's great for wealthy people that are the ones making the loans, and not at all good for the people that got the loans. So flip that around to where we are today. This is not a bad place to be as far as the health of the economy goes. I wouldn't say that we are at the same raging growth that we saw at the end of last year and a little before, but we are definitely still growing, and the growth is significant. Now, I would say, you know, you went out on a limb, I will do it too. I would say that the average GDP for 2024 is probably going to be right in the 3.5 to 3.8% range. That is fast.
Really?
Yeah. And that's just based on the way we're hiring and the productivity that we're seeing.
Hmm.
And any economy is just demographics and productivity. And our productivity is way up and growing. And our employment is high. When you have those two together, you have high growth, period. If people weren't buying our goods, we wouldn't be hiring at the speed that we are. And we're still hiring. So that's our wrap up. Do you want something more? Oh, he has to call.
Well, it's kind of reflected. It's kind of reflected what you just said in another statistic that came out, and that is that while the price of imported goods rose 0.03%, the price of exported goods was up 0.08% this last month. So you're right. People want what we're making.
Yeah, and we're doing it well. So we just keep doing that. Now, if you would like to talk to us off the air, we actually talk to people for a living. I know, it's weird. We give advice on how to manage portfolios, and we do the management. We give advice to businesses on decision-making and to trusts and so on about how to invest their money and how to distribute their assets. So if you would like to talk to us for any number of things included in that and maybe others, you can call us locally at
254-947-1111.
Or toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, where you can see our famously made for podcast faces and our wonderful staff. You can contact us through the contact form or email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com and jake@tpwc.com. If you would like to peruse our newsletters and ancient radio programs and podcasts, that's also available on the website or anywhere you find podcasts. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time around.